From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made 70 years from now. It's the year 2087. A grandmother relaxing on her couch in suburban Rochester when there's a knock at the door. Her granddaughter has arrived with a kind of delicacy, a food from the past, a garbage plate. Now, we can laugh at that thought, but the rest of the scene is entirely unfunny. It's about a world without breathable air, really, with very little green, with a landscape ravaged by human avarice and other sins. That's the premise of a film called The Decay, and it's by Mary Moore and Eleanor Barrera. They're friends, young filmmakers, and their work is going to be on display at the upcoming Fast Forward Film Festival, among many others. It's just over 2 weeks from now at the Little Theater. The festival features films that are 5 minutes or less with a range of environmental themes. It always provides us a lot to talk about, and we've invited the organizer and some of the filmmakers to discuss their work this hour. Again, the Fast Forward Film Festival is Friday, March 31st, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Little Theater. $8 for adults, students, seniors, and Little Theater members, $6. There is a festival gala, which is a screening and awards on Saturday, April 1st, from 6:30 to 10 at the George Eastman Museum, and tickets are all available now at fastforwardrock.org. Let me welcome our guest for the hour. On the line with us is Dr. Andy Stern. He's the founder of the Fast Forward Film Festival and co-founder and executive director of the Lost Bird Project. I have no idea where you are. Are you on the West Coast?
I'm in San Diego.
What are you doing there?
Good afternoon, Evan, and thank you for inviting us.
Good morning to you, Andy. What are you doing?
Right.
What are you doing there?
Well, Fast Forward Film Festival is one of my projects, but I have others that I work on here. I have a project called Smart Fin, which is a surfboard fin that you go out and do your normal surfing, and it very accurately measures ocean chemistry, salinity, pH, temperature. We're working here with the Scripps Institution of Oceanography, the really foremost ocean research facility in the world, trying to track coastal data to better inform us about ocean health.
That's like the least surprising thing I've ever heard from you, Andy. I'm not surprised at all. Are you a surfer, by the way?
I am not a surfer.
Oh, okay, well.
No, but I'm learning to say stoked.
There's still time, Doc. Nice to have you. Andy Stern on the line with us. So he's the founder of this festival, and we've got filmmakers in studio. One of them is Ben Doran, who is an RIT third-year student. He's the filmmaker of a film we're going to be talking about called, well, I call it log.txt or log.txt.
Yeah.
How do you pronounce it?
Either one, really.
Log.txt. He's a stop-motion animation student major, right?
Yeah.
One of two at RIT.
Yeah. In my year, there's two stop motion students. There's a lot of animators, but only two stop motion.
You are half of the stop motion class of your year there. So welcome. And this is his third film in the Fast Forward Film Festival. So we'll be talking about that. Mary Moore and Eleanor Barrera are here, and they are the ones behind The Decay, which I told you a little bit about in the intro. We're going to be getting into that as well coming up here. Mary, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
And Eleanor, thanks for coming on the program today as well.
Thank you.
All right, Dr. Stern, just remind our listeners, we go back to 2014 for the first Fast Forward Film Festival, how this thing got together in the first place and what your vision for it is.
Yeah, first of all, I am so excited to have this enter its third year. The first year we had this idea and had no idea whether it would take or not. I would not have been surprised to have, you know, three submissions, three films, and that would have been the end of the whole idea. So first 2 years, we had over 100 entries, submissions of films each year, and again this year. And oh my gosh, here we go. The thing I am really proud of about the festival is that it's about the Rochester community. The one thing you didn't say in the intro is not only are the films 5 minutes or less, not only do they have to reference the environment in some way or other, but every film must be made by someone who lives in Rochester, New York. That is really the unique thing. There is no other film festival in the world where it screenings the filmmakers are your neighbors. You'll be sitting next to them as you watch the screenings. And I have not yet met you all, Mary, Eleanor, and Ben, but I thank you so much for your work and really your courage. You know, as I picture first-time filmmakers, and especially younger people, sitting in the Dryden Theater with 500 people, a very sophisticated audience, and having their film be shown in that setting, scary and courageous. So thank you three for submitting such wonderful, wonderful films. We have 17 films that we have selected for our finalists this year. There are 14 in the adult category, 3 in the youth category. They're brilliant, they will teach us about the environment, we'll learn things, but like all of the projects I do, they will touch us. They will move us. These filmmakers will allow us into their personal passion. Some people at the screenings will laugh and cry and be moved and will come out of the theater inspired and energized, which is not easy to do these days when you talk about our environmental challenges. And some people will walk out saying, gee, you know, how can I more engage in this challenge that we all share today? And, you know, some people will go on to some kind of activism and engagement. How exciting is that? Well, and it's a blast.
Andy, you said there's 17 films. How many submissions did you have?
Total, we had between 500 and 600, but everyone who doesn't live in Rochester was rejected, and we were left with, I think, about 100.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's a lot of filmmaking and a lot of different styles that you'll see. I mean, from stop motion, we're going to talk to Ben about that. Mary and Eleanor did the film The Decay, and I'll start, I'll let both of you kind of jump in where you need to, because this is a film that has a real kind of warning for all of us, but tell me how you decided you wanted to get involved.
Of ways to tell a story, of ways to engage in the environment, of ways to express, as an artist, your view of what's happening out there. I think the brilliance is really about the collection of submissions more than any individual one. It's some vibrant community. Wow.
Well, Dr. Stern, you stay on the line, and let's let Mary and Eleanor tell us about The Decay, which is, first of all, both of you want to become...
Hello?
Maybe Andy can't hear me. That's part of the problem. Rob, he can't hear me, so let's turn Andy down, and we'll figure out what's going on with Dr. Stern there, and we'll get him hooked up again there. And Mary and Eleanor, when it comes to your film here, both of you would like to get into film and television, but you're how old? Mary, how old are you?
I'm 17.
17, Eleanor?
17 as well.
Okay, is this your first film?
It's my first serious film.
For serious?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Sure, that makes sense. Anybody who has an iPhone can probably fool around and make some films. So your first serious film. So how did you guys decide on a theme? How did you even find out about the festival? How did this come together?
So I was actually on Facebook, and I found this, the Rochester Youth Inspiration Session that the festival holds for youth just to inspire them to make their films. So I went to the event, and it was really unique just in the in that, because there was adult filmmakers there connecting and directing the youth of the community as well. So I was inspired by them. They gave me like some business cards if I had any questions, and I just had all these images in my head that I knew I wanted to get out. And luckily Mary, she knew how to work the camera, so I wrote the screenplay, and she sort of fit all the pieces together and made a film.
Okay, and did you talk about themes at all? You know, for you, did you write the entire script and hand it over to Mary and say, what do you think?
I just sort of met her in a coffee shop and started blabbering at her of all these images that were in my mind, and she just like went along with it. She was excited as well. I knew I wanted to parallel the decay of humanity with the deterioration of the natural world, and she just supported me through it.
Well, that was really interesting storytelling. I mean, some good reveals here. The film opens in the year 2087, and you've got a grandmother who is being delivered a garbage plate.
Yeah.
And she says something along the lines of, like, that's the food we used to eat growing up or something
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I will say that was unrealistic because the garbage plate will live forever, I think. You know? So I think it'll always be at the center of Rochesterians. But they begin to have a conversation and kind of talking about the old days. And we've just got a short clip from part of the conversation between grandmother and granddaughter about, you know, what's changed and why. And I think what you're about to hear is kind of the central question at the heart of this film. So let's listen.
What was it like living in the Green Age? It was beautiful.
But how? What made it so much different than it is today?
What was it like living in the Green Age, and what made it so much different than it is today? Your film is 70 years in the future, mm-hmm. but you're already looking back at 2017 as the Green Age.
Yeah.
What are you
trying
to say there?
Well, I guess that's scary in a way because we know, like right now, the world is already deteriorating, and in many places it is no longer green. So we just wanted to, our film might seem gloomy in a way, but we wanted it more to be a call to action.
Okay. And Mary, what did you think when you saw the script?
I thought it was really great. I mean, it's so to the point about what she wants to make it, what she wanted to make it about, which is in the present, we should be able to do something right now to change the future, because she's kind of looking at it like, in that year, it's like so awful. So now is really the time to start changing and start to care a little bit more about our environment and what we can do to kind of help it.
And for you, Eleanor, are you, I don't want to ask if you're serious about this. Obviously you are. You're making a film about it. But, you know, did you think in your own mind, should this be 2087? Should this be 2187? This should be this. I mean, how much time in the future are you realistically worried about this kind of a scenario?
Well, I'm worried now. So that's why we wanted to make it in a lifespan. So just to see how the grandmother was when she was younger and when she was older, to show how much the world can change in just that one generation.
Eleanor plays the 2017 version of the grandmother in the film, whereas Mary is also in the film. How do you feel about acting, Mary?
I enjoy it. I mean, I love all aspects of filmmaking, so it's something that I'm comfortable with, yeah.
When you submitted this, were you both confident that the Fast Forward Film Festival was going to take it?
No.
No?
I thought it was pretty good. So, I mean, I was really hoping for it. But, I thought it was pretty good. So,
Eleanor, you're a little bit more reserved about it.
Well, I mean, because it was my first time making a film. So I wasn't sure how to compare it to anything else. So I was pleasantly surprised with the result.
When did you find out?
Was it 2 weeks ago? About 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it was March 8th.
Pretty cool moment. Well, how did you find out?
Mary emailed Becca, and then Becca soon got back to us and told us. So then Mary emailed me.
Yeah, because Eleanor, she thought that the notification date was the day before, and she thought that if we weren't notified that we just didn't get in. So you messaged me, and she's like, oh, okay, I guess we didn't get in. And I was like, what? And I ran to the computer, and I checked it, and it was, like, still undecided. So I was like, we have a chance. And that was funny, so.
And do you now think about the fact that this film's going to show at the Fast Forward Film Festival alongside a number of other films? You're going to have, I'm sure, a packed audience there. Does that feel exciting? Does that feel nerve-wracking?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, like, that's my dream, to have my film on the big screen with a bunch of people watching. That's like what I've wanted for a long time. So it's really cool.
Says a 17-year-old. Don't you love that? Like, it's what I've wanted my whole life. No, I'm joking, but that's really cool, because I think what Andy Stern and Fast Forward have done is given you a venue for that, to see how people are going to react. Are you going to be, Mary, are you going to be watching the film, or are you going to be watching people watching the film?
Probably. I mean, I'm going to try and do both at the same time, but probably I'm going to see what people are, how they'll be reacting.
Yeah. What about you, Eleanor?
Yeah, probably the same. Work on those multitasking skills.
The film does warn us about essentially the seven deadly sins and the way greed and those kind of things are impacting the world around us. Eleanor, if there's a message that's a little bit more specific coming out of your film, what do you want people to change? What do you want them to take away with them from a film like this?
I think to show that to create a better world, environmentally, you have to create a better world morally. And I wanted that to be deeply embedded in the film, to just have them take that message away.
Mm-hmm. Mary, what about you?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Like, I think it really starts with the person and what they value. And when you're creating a good environment, I mean, you're living in the environment, so you want to be living in a good space. And I think everyone should be aware of that.
When I taught digital storytelling, we taught students reveals are very important. It's nice to kind of save some aha moments. And the film ends with one of those, and I won't give it away, but there is definitely a moment where you go, wow. So well done. Congratulations
Thank
to
you.
Both
Thank
of you.
You.
Andy, if you've been listening along here, you want to weigh in on what they've been able to create?
Yeah, I completely have. I got disconnected. Did you censor me?
I have no idea what you're talking about. What are you talking about?
Oh, I got cut off. I got cut off for a while.
Oh, no, sure.
I have heard this. And,
mostly, Doc, you were just rambling, so we cut your mic.
You, Mary and Eleanor, I just get goosebumps. I feel, you know, your passion and your engagement with this is really what the festival is about. And one of the things I'm proud of is that we are reaching out to young people and going into city schools and teaching about filmmaking and trying to pull them in. So that at our gala, we have professional filmmakers and first-timers like you guys. And, you know, as I go around and I give talks to environmental groups quite a bit, they're old people like me, right? It's not a lot of young people who are stepping up. And at the Dryden Theater, at the final screening, half of the audience will be young people or more. It's fantastic.
Andy, when it comes to issues like this, you know, you and I have talked, especially I can recall our first conversation about this festival and your thoughts about it. And I was talking to you about your work doing the Lost Bird Project, about what you hoped to create with the Fast Forward Film Festival, and some concerns you had about just mobilizing, you know, sort of societal thought and action around the environment. And you said something to the effect of, you know, nobody has a perfect answer here. I mean, you can't sit here and say, I want people to do X, I want people to do Y. You know, but sometimes through film, people can be inspired to change or to learn. How do you feel any differently now? Do you feel more strident about or more urgent about these issues now, 3 years into this festival?
Well, I do. But I still don't have an answer. I really don't know for anyone what it is they should do. It's the most common question I get, which is, you know, after a talk, someone gets up the microphone and says, well, what can I do? What would you, the expert, recommend that I do? And, you know, it's my belief that what you do is going to have an impact in the world, it has to be in response to your own calling. You have to look inside yourself and ask, how am I called to engage with this urgent problem? And, you know, if people walk out of the film festival a little troubled and say, gee, I want to be more engaged with this, I want to be more involved, but I'm really not sure how, then I would say the festival's been a huge success.
I don't know if it's fair to ask Mary and Eleanor to talk about an entire generation. I mean, they're two 17-year-olds. But I think there's a lot of hope that your generation is going to be engaged, thoughtful about the consequences of actions. There's also some cynicism about whatever I'm sure you love the term millennials or whatever those terms are. I don't even know. Are you guys still technically millennials? Or is that... I don't even know what comes after that, by the way. But the bottom line is there's this mix of cynicism towards young people, and there's also a hope that there is more awareness, more engagement. So I know we can't overgeneralize, but Mary, how do you feel about your generation's approach to environmental issues?
Well, I think our generation, I think we're starting to kind of realize the importance of it, because we're kind of learning from the past generation's mistake, and it's kind of obvious when you just even look around and you see on the news the things that are happening. And I think that we're starting to realize how important it is.
Okay. Eleanor?
Yeah, so my sister just came back from China, and she was showing me all these pictures. And in a lot of her pictures, she was wearing the mask. So I sort of took that and, like, it is happening now. You think of the environment, you think of it as something in the future. But... I don't know. I think our generation is, I want to say we're ready to take it on. And I think festivals like this help us do that, because when I went to the inspiration session, my ideas were respected, and it was just like a new feeling for me, and people were talking to me about the environment, and that had never occurred before.
What you said about your sister is very interesting, in that I think there's a lot of wisdom in what Eleanor just said there. Sometimes we think about the environment and it's just too big for us. We always think it's generations in the future. It's somebody else's problem. It's 100, 500, 1,000, 10,000 years down the line. What Eleanor is saying is her generation is seeing impacts now, so maybe more mobilized now. That's, you know, and maybe the human condition needs that. Maybe the human brain, it's hard to get around beyond your own lifetime, but maybe for your generation, you no longer view it as beyond your own lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, and so that the film, anyway, is called The Decay. You can see it as part of the Fast Forward Film Festival. It's March 31st. That's 2 weeks from tomorrow at the Little Theater, 7 to 9. Tickets, $8. $6 if you're a little member or a senior or a student. And you can get tickets now, fastforwardrock.org/boxoffice. Let me grab a phone call. Margaret in Fairport is on the line. Go ahead, Margaret.
Hi, yes. I had a question for the two students on there. I was just wondering, what was it like trying to film this? Well, I believe they're both high school students. What was the process like?
Okay, great question, Margaret. Mary, Eleanor?
The process, it was pretty easy. I mean, collaborating is the best thing you can do as a filmmaker, especially when you're when we're our age. You get someone to write it, and then you both just you combine everything else with it. I mean, I directed, Ellie wrote, then we both acted, so we kind of had everything we needed.
Well, you needed another cast member.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We also,
one of the stars of the show you needed to go get. Mm-hmm. How hard was that to find?
It was pretty easy. It was my mom's first boss when she moved to Rochester, so I called her up, and she was all about it. And so the next few days, we just filmed with her, and she was really excited about it.
How long did shooting take?
Probably 2 to 3 hours.
Okay. And you did that over a couple of days, or was it just a one-day shoot?
That scene with the grandmother and the granddaughter, that took about, like, maybe two hours. And then the rest of the little scenes that you see, like the flashbacks, we did that throughout one day, and we drove around Rochester and found places that we thought looked good.
Okay.
And so we did it in the span of 2 days, and then I edited the film.
What'd you use to edit?
I used iMovie, actually.
iMovie?
Yeah. So
it's amazing what is out there and what tools there are and how high quality the tools are.
Oh, yeah. Frankly. It's great.
You know? Okay, so there's a look at the process. So just once you had a concept and a script, a few days of work, and you had something together. And how long was the total runtime, by the way, of the film?
4 minutes and like 34 seconds.
Okay. Were you worried when you had that first script there, Eleanor, that it was going to be more than five, or were you pretty confident it was going to be under the limit?
Well, for screenplays, usually like one page of script equals 1 minute of time. So I had around 4 or 5 pages, so I knew it was going to be somewhere near there.
Close enough in any way.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me go ahead and grab a phone call that I'm sure Andy Stern is going to want to respond to this. John in Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Yeah, I think I talked to Andy last year, and I'm one of the people, maybe many people actually, that believe that man-made climate change really is a misnomer, that really the sun contributes a lot to climate change and man not so much. And I proposed doing a film for his festival, and I was rejected on the air that they wouldn't accept that kind of a film, but which I thought was kind of wasn't very open to new ideas. But I just read recently there was a 3 climate researchers from MIT who had did some research regarding CO2 and actually said that CO2 is our friend, not our enemy, and shouldn't be necessarily diminished because of photosynthesis, etc. produces, as your people know there, photosynthesis produces oxygen by green plant life using CO2 to convert to oxygen. So Andy, would you be amenable to having a film next year regarding these research done by these climate researchers from MIT?
Thank you, John. Take it away, Andy, and then I've got some ideas, too. Go ahead, Andy.
All right. John, first of all, thank you for calling again. I remember you very well, and I've talked a bit about what you said last year. And I would change my response to you this year. I would say
that if you were to submit a film that on its own merits was of the kind of quality that our finalists are offering, we would probably accept the film, no matter what your point of view about anything. If it was expressed beautifully, in a heartfelt way, it would be strongly considered. Now, I say that even though I know that your ideas that climate change is not man-made are wrong, and I'm not out on a limb to say that. That is the consensus, essentially, of every scientist on Earth who is not paid by the fossil fuel industry. So, but even though I know that's true, if you submitted a film of that caliber, it would be seriously considered.
Andy, if I do a film saying that Brussels sprouts is the cause of climate change, and I can't stand those Brussels sprouts, and I do this beautiful film, I mean, like, that's pretty much just about as scientifically valid, but maybe I'll do that. Or I would also say to John, I mean, like, this idea of CO2 is our friend, bell peppers are our friend, but if I ate 500 pounds of bell peppers today, I'm still going to the hospital. Still not good. I mean, this pretty basic. Okay, let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back, and we're going to hear from another filmmaker. Ben Dorn's here. He's an RIT student. He is half of his class's stop motion animation major, and he is the filmmaker behind Log.Text. It is funky cool, and it actually makes you think a little bit, and he's going to tell us about it when we come back here. We'll also explore more of the concepts behind the Fast Forward Film Festival, which is coming your way at the Little Theater Friday, March 31st. That's 2 weeks from tomorrow, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Little, $8 for adults, $6 for students, seniors, and Little Theater members if you want to attend. And there is a festival gala the next day, 6:30 to 10 p.m. at the George Eastman Museum, Saturday, April 1st. Adults are $30, students and seniors $25. Again, all of this at fastforwardrock.org. We continue in just a moment. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, it's Unleashed, the pet show in the first hour. Your chance to have questions answered about your pet's health and behavior. Then in our second hour, we preview the return of Home Fires on PBS. It's a show about how an English community was impacted by World War II. We're also going to look at the music of the time with Michael Lasser, host of Fascinating Rhythm, and get some history lessons as well. It's all Friday on Connections. Welcome back to the program. We're all getting ready for a big afternoon meal of 500 pounds of bell pepper. Oh, it's just a joke for our friend John. We're having fun. John, thanks for calling the program. It's always nice to hear from him. And anyone else who wants to call, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WX6I if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Andy Stern's on the line with us. He's the founder of the Fast Forward Film Festival. And Ben Doran is in studio with us, who's an RIT student, third year. His film is called Log.Text, and it is stop-motion animation. And you yourself, Ben, said that this is the weirdest one you've made yet. Is that right?
Probably. Well, I've made one since now.
And that's even weirder? It's
probably on the same par.
But you think this is kind of weird?
Yeah, I think it's kind of weird.
Well, you know what? I thought it was memorable and it was effective. But why don't you take me through the concept of it?
So basically in log.txt, it's a... on the surface, it's kind of just a weird little film about a lumberjack finding a computer who thinks he's better at cutting down trees than the lumberjack. And so that's kind of the whole premise of this little 3-minute film. But I kind of spun a little bit. I didn't start it intending to make it about climate and climate change and like deforestation and stuff. But kind of as I was actually, I mean, I'm sitting there animating it for how many hours or whatever. And as I was going, it kind of devolved into this, like, I was seeing all of these like connections that I could make to deforestation.
Sure. And one of the messages is, you know, allowing technology to decide our future, mm-hmm. Of what is forested, what is not, what we're cutting down. Where did you learn about that? I mean, did you find yourself Googling it or something else?
It's kind of one of those things that it comes up a lot now, especially like in the news and everything. Yeah. And just between technology becoming one of the most like important things in our lives, and like even just machines, everything being automated now. And there's a lot of things about how machines are going to take over the workforce and stuff like that. And so in this one, I kind of had that, like, we're kind of letting, not specifically machines, but we're letting the, like the choices of what's happening in the world go down to, oh, we need this much, so we're going to cut down that much, you know, especially for wood and stuff like that. We need to produce this much, so we're just going to go do it, rather than the, like, the actual ethical, what do we need? Like, what do we actually need? What can we survive on? Not, we're going to make this much money, so we need to cut down this much wood.
So there's a nice little surprise in store for the computer in the film, right. And without giving too much away there. But you know, you heard some of your fellow filmmakers describing their process. Stop motion, in my mind, it has to take longer. But I don't know. I mean, what's the? I'm kind of scared to ask. How many hours goes into a film like this?
It didn't take 3 hours. I can tell you that.
More like 30 or more like 300?
Like closer to 300.
Wow.
I mean, it didn't take that long, but it wasn't 30. Especially just because stop motion is, even next to 2D animation, which is like your Saturday morning cartoon, stuff mm-hmm. like that. And it's closer to that than filmmaking, but like it's a weird hybrid because in filmmaking, like you have all your cameras, you have to set up all your lights, and you have to be really conscious of what's actually in the world. Well, in 2D, you're doing the single frame animation where you're drawing every frame, but you make up everything, so your background's not going to be there unless you put something there. And so stop motion is this weird hybrid where you are moving them bit by bit and taking a picture every time you move them, but you also have to be conscious of everything that they're working with lights and stuff like that, which, so I kind of get to see how terrible some of the bits are of each thing. One of the reasons I love stop motion is because I don't have to, one, be in it, or to, like, direct other people, which is kind of a blessing and a curse because it's hard telling people what to do, and I know you guys know that. It's very hard to be like, that wasn't right. This is, do this again. But then it kind of all falls on me, so if I screw up animating something.
Sounds like you'd rather it all fall on you, though.
Yeah, I guess so. I kind of... But it's not a perfect thing. I'm not like, yes, you know what I mean?
Well, your film is clearly an A film if you ever turn it into a class. But let me also say, I'm curious to know if I missed it. The lumberjack, for example, or the trees, or the computer, is made of what?
Everything is made of tons of different things. So basically, the set I had built was the biggest set I've ever built because I wanted to work on set building. It's kind of what I want to go into. I want to go into the pre-production stuff. And so this set is 6 feet long on this giant wood table that I had to build to put it on. One, because I'm tall enough where I couldn't animate on any of the other tables because, like, for my other films, I used to kneel down, like, next to this tiny table and my knees blew out. So I built this giant table so that I could be the right height, built this giant set. It's all made out of insulation foam that I just carved up. So all the trees are insulation foam in the hills and everything. And then they're all covered in basically paper mache and painted and flocked and everything. And then the characters are, the robot is actually just bare bones, what you call armature. And so on the inside of the puppets, if you want them to stand up and walk around and stuff, you're not going to be able to do that without some sort of skeleton of some sort inside. So sometimes I use wire. The lumberjack had wire inside of him. But the robot had what they call ball and socket armatures. And you can actually see on his limbs, those are supposed to go inside. But for him, I just left them because he's a robot.
So you can get away with that.
Yeah, I like to get away with things. and so the rest of him is just oven-baked clay that I just molded and then baked. So... Same with the lumberjack. I mean, but he's got clothes on. So,
are you happy with how it came out?
Yeah, I'm definitely happy with how it came out. It's an enjoyable little film. It's, you know, I can watch it over and over, and it's still funny. So.
I assume you guys haven't seen each other's films, right?
No, I haven't seen yours.
Oh,
so.
No,
oh, just wait.
It is cool. Yeah,
yours sounds very serious. And I'm going on like
no. But to be fair, Ben, you know, yours was definitely funky fun, but it also. Mm-hmm. Hits you with a real message there at the end, and all of a sudden you go, wow. Andy, what do you think?
I'm blown away. No. What I'm hearing is the energy, the creativity, the sincerity, right? Ben, you and Mary and Eleanor are serious about what you're doing. It may be funny. It may be goofy. It may be, you know, inventive to figure out how to make it happen. But there's a sincerity that is just shining through. These are an expression of you all, and how wonderful is that? And I'm just, you know, to create a format where you can show what your work in public is just, you know, it's every filmmaker's dream, right?
Annie, you're ruining Ben street cred with all the sincerity thing. I mean,
I'll keep
ruining his brand.
No. No way. Yeah, I'll take it.
You'll take it? Okay, that's good.
I think what he said with the, like, it's enjoyable to make serious films and funny films and, like, things that take a wild spin on stuff, like theirs, is really important, just because sometimes it's hard to get someone to sit down and be like, here, we're going to watch a documentary on how we're killing the earth. Like, no one's like, oh, great, you know?
Right.
It's like, it's 3 hours long, and you're going to watch trees cut down for an hour. And so I think that's, unless you're really into it, that's a hard thing to watch, and to get other people to watch, or to buy tickets to. So I think one of the most important things that I've found is I make wild things just because... when someone like even looks like a screenshot at that, they're like, what is this? And you watch it and you're like, oh, it's 3 minutes long. You can watch that. Like, even if it's terrible, you can watch a 3 minute film. And so with films like mine, I'm really trying to make something just wild. So you sit down and you watch it. And then at the end, you're like, oh yeah, wow, I did learn something. You know what I mean?
And animation is one thing. Stop motion. As we said, there's only two of you in your class at RIT doing it. Why did you want to do stop motion?
I've been doing stop motion for a lot of years now. But it's kind of one of those things that I was always like building stuff and I would draw and doodle and everything like that. And I still love to draw, but I always found some like amazing things in the world that like just little like props, even with like action figures and stuff. Like I was an action figure kid and you always wanted to make those come alive, and like stop motion is the exact thing that, like, I mean, it takes a while, but that's exactly what it does. It makes like inanimate objects do whatever you want.
No, I actually admire it so much just because there's this interesting little bifurcation in what Ben just said about, you know, well, the films are 3 minutes, 4 minutes, or maybe if you don't like one, you know, it's going to be, there's another film coming soon. And again, the older generations will go, oh, well, there's that lack of attention span. But lack of attention span, you've got to do dozens of hours just to do one short film.
Oh, yeah.
It is an unbelievable amount of work that you're doing.
Yeah, it's incredible because, like, I wouldn't say stop motion, maybe it takes longer than live action. But the thing is, like, sometimes you get swept up in the animation. You're like, oh, that's cool. But, like, live action, it takes so much more to, like, really get a point across. And if you can do that, it's really powerful because you're seeing these real people go through this. But in stop motion, I'm like, I mean, it's 24 frames for every second of film. So for a 5 minute film, I mean, you can think about, I mean, it's well over like 5,000 photos for just that. And I'm building all this stuff ahead of time and moving. Yeah. So, yeah. So one shot, probably like in the film, he runs and it, I mean, just to give you a sense of it, I mean, he stands up and everything. And then the next shot, it cuts to him just running and the camera moving, and he runs and jumps over a log, and then it cuts to another shot. But just that shot alone took me like 3 days because I had to get him to run, and then when he jumps, he has to be in the air, which things don't stay up to take a picture if
That's
you want
right.
them to. So I had to build rigs, like I had him on Legos and stuff, and then you have to go afterwards and wipe it all out. But I also had the camera moving along a track that I had to move every, so it's like it's so many things that you don't think of, and then you have to. You have to figure
it's
out.
It's problem
how to
solving
do it.
In many ways.
Yeah, yeah. Every second of it, it's like, oh, great! I didn't even think of that.
Amazing. Well, and I'm curious to know same kind of question I asked to Mary and Eleanor. Do you think your generation's more engaged on this stuff?
Oh, definitely.
You do?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Even like I feel like we're telling adults a lot of the things about this stuff because we're like you were saying with your sister and stuff. Like we're seeing it firsthand and being like, this shouldn't be this way, right? Like, adults are so, many adults are so used to how it is and how it's slowly been.
I mean, you're an adult, by the way, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm still.
You mean
in
older adults, but
yeah,
okay.
Older adults. Yeah, okay. Older people, yeah. You know. They're so used to seeing this gradually happen that it's kind of numb to them. And so we're being like, well, it shouldn't be like foggy 24/7. Like, I shouldn't have to wear a mask outside, right?
This is not okay.
Yeah, this is not okay. And I think even, I hate to bring up social media, but because it gets brought up way too much, but we see so much and it gets to us so quickly that it doesn't go through any filters. And it's one of those things that if it'll end up at us and it kind of affects us. I mean, if you see, like, I've seen pictures of the smog in China and stuff like that, and it's absolutely ridiculous. And it's one of those things that someone takes a picture and sends it right to me. I don't have to go to China to even see that.
Andy, there's a lot of wisdom in what Ben just said, but there's also, I think, a moment for a lot of real adults, as Ben just said. You know, I mean, the nearly fossilized adults that
I'm
he's
not
thinking
a real
of.
Adult yet.
Yeah, right. For us to reflect on our choices, because what Ben and Mary and Eleanor are saying is that they are seeing the results of our choices, of previous generations' choices, and they're seeing the consequences. And Andy, for you, it's not hard for you to put your arms around it and take responsibility and decide that changes are necessary. Why do you think for many people, you know, even some who acknowledge it, change is hard?
Yeah. One of the things I love hearing this is these filmmakers are challenging us, shaking us up. You know, what is in front of our noses that we're not really paying attention to? And this isn't exactly your question, but one of the things about the festival is that, you know, it's not easy these days to talk about climate change, just as Ben said, in ways that are, you know, not gloomy or depressing and not boring and tiresome. Who wants to watch trees being cut down for an hour? Was Ben's
idea. Yeah, he's right.
The festival offers a way to do that. You can hear these two films, but, you know, they are going to be innovative new ways to talk about climate change that are not those things. And we surely need that new vocabulary.
I want to listen to a clip, if we could, for a film that's the filmmaker is not represented here today. He was actually here yesterday, of all things. Michael Tome is his name. He was here because we were having a conversation on the Raise the Age campaign, and he's become an activist involved with that campaign about the age of criminal responsibility in New York State. But it turns out he's a filmmaker, and he put together a film called City of Gardens. And Andy, for me, this is my favorite film maybe in the festival, and that says nothing of the filmmakers at the table here. I think their work is great. It was so sincere and beautiful, but it also was very good storytelling. He told his own story of his history of gardening that goes back to, you know, many generations in his family, and then connected it to Rochester in a way that I thought was really beautiful. And I want to listen to a clip of Michael Tome's City of Gardens.
My city, so green that back in 1905, a horticulturist from Harvard called it the city in a forest. And even before that, while dedicating a pavilion and its first park to its children, it was called the City of Flowers. The city whose printers once published so much art to celebrate its world-famous plant nurseries and seed companies, and eventually turned those nursery grounds into neighborhoods and parks. Is there another American city that once had so many plants named for it? My city, called by me, the City of Gardens.
All right, let me state the obvious here. It doesn't do it justice if you can't see some of the imagery with it, and so you should go see it if you want to at the Fast Forward Film Festival on March 31st. I just love that, Andy, because exactly what Ben and you were just saying, that was an uplifting film that made me look at Rochester and this region in a different way. What do you think?
Right. I mean, this region is, I mean, this is an amazing place, Rochester, New York. There's so much artistic activity going on here that you would never, ever know about. I mean, this festival is about film, but you could make it about other art forms for sure. But just, you know, hearing about what's going on in film makes you so proud of our community. You know, with respect to climate change, it seems clear in the last few years that the important initiatives that are going to impact climate change and our response to it are no longer coming from from the national level in this country. They're going to be from communities like Rochester. So one of the aims of the festival also is to build a stronger environmental community, and that has happened so impressively over the last 2 years of the festival.
So that's another piece of it. That's another layer of the festival.
Well, and that, I was actually planning to ask you that, so let's just build on that a little bit here. I've heard so much since November, since the national elections, people saying, you know, if I was asleep before, I'm going to get more engaged, more involved in whatever issue. And that's, you know, that's not necessarily even one political side or another. It's just more, okay, I see what's going on. I want to be more involved and pick your issue. But Andy, you seem to be saying that on the environment, you know, going back multiple years now, you are seeing more engagement, not just filmmaking, which is, of course, important to drive messages and to get us to think, sometimes laugh and learn, but also engagement beyond that. Are you seeing that?
Absolutely. Every community I go to has kind of rebounded with newly found empowerment and energy as a response to this election. That's my read on it. And that the message has come home. It is up to us. Let's get on with it. It is up to us. And I see that in Rochester also.
Well,
wonderful.
Well, before we let you go, Andy, tell us a little bit about how these things are sort of awarded and decided. There are judges, I think. Tell us how it works.
We have wonderful jurors. We have every year. This year, again, we do. We have three film jurors, but we also have Dr. Anahita Williamson, who is at the Environmental Protection Agency as director of the Division of Environmental Science. And so she will be weighing in on the content, not so much the artistic expression, but, you know, she's the engineer on the juror. So the four jurors all weigh in. They all, each one sees every single film submitted, all 100. Thank you, jurors, for spending the time to do that.
Wow.
And so they select everything. Then we will have an audience award. The audience will pick their favorite, and winners in each category get $1,000. That's the prize.
So I'm sure I'm sure for the filmmaker sitting at the table, that could go a long way. I mean, that could cover like two books, Ben.
Yeah, maybe.
Do you still buy books?
Three. No, I don't buy them.
Looked at me like, no way, no, who would buy books? Do you have books, you just don't buy them? Now you're in real trouble.
Well, I feel like I bought like most of them, and then they just kind of use the same ones over and over. I buy equipment. I buy like cameras and stuff. That's my bloodline.
Absolutely. Like, in your line of work and your study.
Yeah, I actually I won in the past, and like all of the money, I bought like a really nice tripod and everything that made my life 1,000 times easier. So,
well, very cool. And, you know, Mary and Eleanor, $1,000 that's a lot of money. May not, you know, change everything about your life, but does it help you as you pursue more of what you want to do? Mary, what do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if I did win, and I'd probably put it to more film equipment, and maybe get like a new editing system, maybe some more camera equipment. So yeah, I'd put it to my filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. Eleanor?
Me as well, especially since I didn't have a camera to begin with. All I had were these images and ideas. So to be able to transform a vision to a visual reality is something that I've always wanted to do.
By the way, it's a really competitive world that you're moving into. Both of you want to be in film and TV of some kind. You want to do more writing or more, what do you want to do?
I mean, I love writing and directing. So kind of both. Kind of the combination of both, I'd say.
And Eleanor, for you?
Screenwriting mainly.
Okay, I mean, super competitive world, but it sounds like something that you have a passion for. What's the ideal scenario? I mean, you're either still in Rochester or you're somewhere else. The cliches are New York City or the West Coast, but maybe so. I mean, Mary, and you know, if things are working out, where do you want to be?
I probably would want to head toward New York City, rather than California. But, yeah, that's what I'm looking for after college. Probably find some connections there and, just go from there.
What about you, Eleanor?
Well, I'd love to find myself writing for BBC or another network like
wow,
that.
Wow, very interesting. Very interesting. And Ben, for someone like you, I'm sure it's still competitive, but there's fewer people wanting to do stop motion.
Yeah.
But what kind of work do you possibly envision for yourself?
Well, unfortunately, it's almost more competitive just because there's not as many, like, studios doing it. But, yeah, there are not as many people doing it either. L.A. And actually Portland, Oregon is where Leica is. They've been making all the really big box stop motion films right now. So I'd like to work as a production designer or kind of like pre-production building sets and stuff like that. So.
Okay. Last minute, Judith writes to the program, and Andy, you can answer this question. Judith writes, you've really excited me about these films. We will be in D.C., though, for School Grandparents Day on March 31st. Would there be another way to see them at another time? Andy?
We have changed the festival every year based on feedback we've gotten. We have tweaked a lot of things about the festival this year, but the biggest change is the answer is yes, but I am not at liberty to divulge the details of that until April 1st.
Okay.
That evening we will talk about further screenings, which are planned.
Is this part of the big...
Yes.
There's some big reveal that Andy was gonna do on this program, and then he was instructed it's got to wait till the gala, and I said, no, I'm going to tell Andy that we're going to cut your mic if you don't do the big reveal, but I guess we really have to wait?
All I will say is that throughout the year there will be more screenings, and one of the goals is to give these amazing filmmakers more audiences.
I feel like it would be so easy to get this out of you. You're like the guy who cannot keep a secret. I love this. But I'm going to let it go and let you tell more to your audience at the gala on April 1st. Or you can check out the films if you're in town and available Friday, March 31st, 2 weeks from tomorrow at the Little Theater, 7 to 9 p.m. Andy Stern, the man behind the Fast Forward Film Festival. Congratulations. Thanks for the time, as always. I always enjoy it, Andy.
Thank you, Evan, very much.
And Ben Dorn, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Glad you got an A on that project.
Thanks.
Film was great. Mary Moore, Eleanor Barrera, good luck to both of you.
Thank you. Great film. Thanks for being here. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer of this broadcast, Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We'll talk to you Friday on member-supported public radio.